The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
What's so promising about the Promised Land? I think before we can really understand the meaning of the land of Israel, and if there's ever been a time in Jewish history where we really need to understand the meaning of Israel, is right now. So to understand what's promising about the Promised Land, I think we have to ask another question, which is like, you know, basically Jewish thing to do, which is what's so chosen about the chosen people? And if we understand what's so chosen about the chosen people, we'll then be able to understand what's so promising about the Promised Land. Now, I remember when I was a kid, I would say probably my first traumatic experience with being Jewish was when I was in grade 2. We grew up in a non-Jewish neighborhood in Toronto, and I was actually the only Jewish kid in my grade. I think there was another Jewish kid somewhere in the school. And I always thought that the chosen people means that we are the smartest people in the world. And that was confirmed because I was the smartest kid in the class. And I didn't take that personally. You know, I was pretty humble about it. It was just my genes. I mean, you know, it's like if you're born a Jew, you're smart. You know, you heard Einstein, haven't you? Right, you know. You know. And so I didn't really take this personally. I just figured, you know, chosen people, the most intelligent people. And then somewhere within about 2 or 3 months, thank you, 2 or 3 months into the year, this little Japanese girl moved into the neighborhood. And she knocked me out of the ring. She was like absolutely brilliant. I still remember her name, Patty Nickanani, right? And I was so disturbed because could she be Jewish? She don't look Jewish. Did her father change his name from Nickanansky? I mean, and that was a real shocker to me that here is this non-Jewish girl who is smarter than me. Now, of course, it took me a little while to realize, and a little education, that the chosenness of the Jewish people has really nothing to do with our intelligence. Yes, it is quite remarkable that when you look at the percentage of Nobel Prize winners, it's quite remarkable, unusual, that so many of them are Jewish. But that is not at all what the chosen people means. What does chosenness mean? And what have we been chosen for? It says in the Torah, the beginning of the idea of the chosen people is Abraham. It says in the Torah that God communicates to Abraham and says, Lech lecha me'artzecha, go from your country, your birthplace, your father's home, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation, and through you the world will be blessed. It's a very disturbing piece, because why is there absolutely no prelude to the story? Just before this story, it says nothing about Abraham. I really don't know who he is. And Torah introduces the most important, or the founding father of our nation, and there are no real credentials. Who is he? Why did God reach out to this man? Why did God promise this man all these promises? Now, I know most of us have probably heard stories if we were in Hebrew school, about how Abram was so incredibly kind, and how Abraham had a tent that had really no walls, but only doors, because he wanted maximal visibility to see any possible you know, passerbys to invite in to, for food. And we know that Abraham, at the risk of his own life, went out there to fight against an idolatrous community. And we know that Abraham, at a very young age, came to a consciousness of God on his own. We all know that, but none of this is written in the Torah itself, in the five books of Moses. This is Midrash, and I'm not in any way questioning the authenticity of the Midrash, but it's a little odd that the Torah does not in any way introduce us to this great man and say some great praises about him, so we understand why God has chosen this man and has promised this man a great nation in that land. Doesn't say anything. Now, what makes this even more disturbing is when you know a little bit about the stories in the Torah, then the prime character just before Abraham was Noah. And what does it say right out in the Torah about Noah? It says, Noah ish tzaddik haya. Noah was a pure tzaddik, holy person, and he walked with God. So now I really am disturbed. Because how is it that Abraham, who is the founding father of the chosen people, has absolutely no mention of his credentials, and then the character just before him, Noah, we're taught is a tzaddik, a holy, righteous man who walks with God. So now I really have a problem. Why is it, obviously why is it, that the Torah is not giving us any credentials for Abraham's chosenness? Now think about the difference between the chosenness of Noah and the chosenness of Abraham. Noah was chosen, and what did that mean about the rest of the world? It means the rest of the world was rejected. Because Noah and his family are chosen to be put in a boat and saved from destruction, world destruction. But what is the chosenness of Abraham? Is the chosenness of Abraham a rejection of the world? Is that there's something right about Abraham and wrong about everyone else? It doesn't say that. Do you follow that? When it says Noah was a tzaddik in his time, it means he was a righteous man and nobody else was. He was chosen to survive. And everyone was rejected. But when it comes to Abraham, it is not at all about rejection of the world. The chosenness of Abraham and the Jewish people, his children, is God's affirmation and commitment to the world. Do you understand that difference? Because that becomes critical to understand who we are. Because somehow, a lot of us, including myself for many, many years, we're under the impression that we're this little tribe. And that what interests us and all that interests us is us. And that's really not Jewish. The very purpose of our existence is for the world. To benefit and to bring blessing to the world. What's interesting about the particular identity, the tribal commitment of the Jewish people, is it's built upon universal dreams. I'm Jewish not because I reject the world. I'm Jewish because I care about the world. That's a whole different understanding than most people think. Most people think. Whereby on one hand, if you look at Jewish law, it seems to separate the Jewish people, exclude the world from us. It seems to be a position of isolationists, where we're interested in doing our own little shtetl, our own little ghetto somewhere over here. And is there a blessing for the Tsar? Yes, may God keep the Tsar far away from us. That seems to be the idea of the chosenness of the Jewish people, whereby as a child I thought the chosen of Jewish people really was God's rejection of the world. We're better than everyone else, right? And that is not genuinely the Torah position. The chosenness of the Jewish people is born out of God's concern and love and desire to bring blessing to the entire world. And through you, God says to Abraham and your children, the world will be blessed. That's an important understanding of the chosen people. Critical. On one hand, you have a tradition that seems to build a very isolational, particular kind of tribal attitude. And on the other hand, you discover that that tribalism is built precisely for and because of the interest of what we can and must and will do for the entire world. So in our very roots, we are universalists. And yet, because of our love for the world, we need to unite. We need to create time. We need to create a tribal energy. But not because we're interested in excluding and running away from the world. It's because the only way we can impact the world is when we unite and are one together. So now once you understand that point, you can begin to now understand what's so promising of the promised land. What is Abraham being chosen to become? Are we being chosen to become the chosen religion? Or are we chosen to be a chosen nation? We're chosen to be a nation, a goy kadosh, a holy nation. And this is an additional confusion that most people have. They somehow think that Judaism is a religion, right? And maybe they have that sense that as a religion, we have a concern for the world. But where does the land of Israel come in? In fact, nationalism seems to be the very opposite, or creates the very ultimate problems for religion. In other words, church and state is generally understood to be in opposition to each other, mutually exclusive, right? And in Rome, the attitude was, let that which is unto Caesar's be Caesar's, and let that which is unto God's be God. But separate the church from state. When you study the Torah, you realize that the ideal is a spiritual, God-conscious state. And most people would think that that's completely mutual exclusive. Okay? If you want religion, it's an individual kind of experience. You go out to some mountain, you meditate, and you seek to become one with God. But that is not the aspirations of the Jewish people. The aspirations of the Jewish people, as described by the Torah, is that we build not just holy individuals. Before Abraham came into the world, there were holy individuals. Until today, there are plenty of really holy individuals that are not Jewish. True servants of God, truly bringing great blessings into the world as individuals. But our goal isn't simply to create a congregation, a collection of holy individuals. Our purpose is to become a holy nation. And to become a holy nation is an incredible challenge. Because to build a nation, you've got to go back to planet Earth. Because a nation needs a government, a nation needs an army, a nation needs highways, roads, a nation needs sewage. In other words, generally, nationalism would be precisely the obstacle to heightened spiritual consciousness, right? Because it's forcing me back to the land when most people think their religion is about going to the spirit. Judaism is actually a total paradigm shift in that it's about going back to the land, creating holy sewage, creating holy agriculture, holy farmers. It's not about creating a bunch of rabbis. It's about creating holy farmers and, I know this is hard, holy politicians. You know what they say, 99% of all the politicians give the rest a bad name. Unfortunately, I feel that's very true in Israel. So imagine, here is Avraham, this profoundly spiritual person. His first encounter with God is, Abraham, leave your country, your city, your father's place. And he would probably think that the continuation is, and I shall take you to some mountain where there you will meditate and achieve higher levels of consciousness and spiritual ecstasy. But to Abraham's probably absolute shock is God says, and I will make you great, right? I will bless you, which the Torah tells us means money. I'll make you basically financially wealthy. I will turn you into a nation with everything that nationhood entails. And I'm going to take you to a land. And imagine a spiritual person would say, that's just the opposite. You're taking me away from God. If I want God, then I don't want to, you know, find myself in wealth and having to protect borders of land. Why would I want that? And the answer is because I'm not choosing you to become a holy individual. I'm choosing you to become a holy nation. I want you to demonstrate in the world that God doesn't simply belong in the chapel, but that God belongs in every aspect of human existence. That you have to find God even in building your highways. You have to demonstrate to the world that the presence of God permeates everyone, everything, everywhere, every aspect of our lives. That's a whole different purpose. So now you understand, this is the confusion people have about the land of Israel. Why would I go to the land of Israel when one could find some very wonderful spiritual communities all over the world? Right? I mean, you can find probably more kosher restaurants in Manhattan than you would probably in Yerushalayim, right? And the not only more, but the variety of kosher restaurants, you know, Japanese, and like, I mean, you won't find that variety. One could then say, well, one could live a more Torah life outside the land of Israel. Going to the land of Israel, for some people, doesn't feel like a spiritual aliyah, an ascent, but for a lot of people, they actually feel it'll be a spiritual descent. Why would I want to go to a land? But that's exactly the point. The goal of the Jewish people is not to be spiritual. And that's why people get confused. They think, oh, Judaism is about spirituality. But if you really understand Judaism, you'll see it just keeps bringing you back to face the challenges of a real world. Because Judaism isn't about spirituality, it's about something much greater than spirituality. Because spirituality is the opposite of physicality. The spiritual is the opposite of the material. But Judaism is interested in holiness. And holiness means that the spiritual and the material unite, and together is the home of godliness. Together, both the physical and the spiritual, both the individual and the national. And that's what's so promising about the Promised Land. What's promising about the Promised Land is it's a land that creates the opportunity to demonstrate that the presence of God, the values of divinity, must and can permeate all aspects of human existence. And that, unfortunately, is what most people just don't understand about Israel. You see, modern Zionism, and one of the reasons why we're seeing what they're calling now post-Zionism, the shock of some of the greatest leaders of the Zionist movement have given up land, have exiled their own people. I mean, in the history of the Jewish people, have we exiled 10,000 of our own people? We? In today and yesterday and the day before, the Israeli government is destroying synagogues. We are destroying 26 synagogues. It's like outrageous what's going on. And again, I'm not going into whether in the end that's what needed to be done or not. That's not my point. The point is the phenomena of secular Israel, secular Zionism, and its relationship to and the motivation of Israel. I mean, you know how many Israelis are in Houston? There's 60,000 Jews in Houston. 20,000 are Israeli. One-third of the population is Israeli. And I understand that most of the Israelis actually don't even live in Jewish neighborhoods, right? So that means that most probably the next generation of that Israeli family won't be Jewish, right? Because they're not in Jewish communities, and they can't afford to send their kids to Jewish schools, most probably, right? And that's just in Houston, but this is really all over the world. Because why should I go to Israel? Right. What is the importance of the land of Israel? And if I can't right now live in Israel, how can I participate in building the land of Israel? Why would that be an important Jewish value that I care about building a nation? Wouldn't it be more important that I'm building mikvahs or building glatt kosher restaurants? Why nationalism? In the history of Zionism, there were different positions. Herzl's position. I'm not sure how many people know that Theodor Herzl was an extremely assimilated Jew. He didn't really know that much about Judaism. But he was deeply disturbed by the plight of the Jewish people. Deeply disturbed by the phenomena called anti-Semitism. And when you had this case about a man named Dreyfus, who was, you know, was as not Jewish as could be, but was Jewish, and clearly for Herzl anyways, and probably everybody else, that Herzl was being picked on, not Herzl, but Dreyfus was being picked on just because he's a Jew, right? Herzl said, look, this is crazy. So Herzl's first solution to the problem of being Jewish was mass assimilation. That would make sense from a rational point of view. Why keep doing this? Like, if they don't like you, and I don't know why, because we kind of look like everybody else. I mean, I do. if I didn't have the beard in the past, I don't think I look particularly Jewish. My wife tells me I have a non-Jewish nose. I don't know if that's a compliment, but she says I have a non-Jewish nose. I don't know how I got that. But when you think about it, why not? Assimilation has been so rampant throughout history. Like, why keep pushing something? What benefit do you get? So his attitude is very rational. I mean, I could understand it. Why don't we try and encourage Jews to assimilate? Right? Just encourage Jews to assimilate. You know, they say a joke about this fellow who wanted to assimilate, and a very Jewish name, so he took this non-Jewish name, called himself Hudson, and he moved into a very WASPy area, and he tried to join one of these clubs, and they started asking questions, and then they finally says, well, so, you know, what's your national identity, or what's your religion? He says, I'm a goy. So, you know, a Jew is a Jew is a Jew. And that's what Herzl was shocked to realize, that you can't even assimilate. Right? You can try, you know, you can run, but you can't hide, because eventually, somehow, that Jewishness is there. And that really, for myself, as a child growing up in a non-Jewish area, why was I Jewish? I was picked on for being a Jew because I did well in school, so they called me this brown nose, right? That, like, you worked so hard, you know, you're a schwitz or whatever, right? And then when I would take off for Jewish holidays, they'd call me lazy. Like, wait a second, like, could you decide what I'm at? Either I'm lazy or I work too hard. But it was like I definitely grew up feeling anti-Semitism. And so you have to ask yourself, well, why keep this thing going? So Herzl realized that, you know what? We just don't have a choice. There's some great decree upon us that a Jew is a Jew is a Jew, no matter if you're a religious Jew, whether you're... But it doesn't matter. Just somehow anti-Semitism is a phenomenon, an inexplicable for many people, phenomena. So then Herzl said, you know, the only answer and solution to the Jews is we've got to have our own place. Right? We have to have our own place. But if that's your perspective, then you don't need the land of Israel per se. And you certainly don't need the entire biblical boundaries of the land of Israel per se. You just need an asylum to protect yourself, a place to run to. And therefore, Herzl's position on Zionism was simply a very rational solution. How do we protect Jews from anti-Semitism when they are faced with anti-Semitism? From Herzl's perspective, if you're living somewhere in Zululand and nobody knows you're Jewish and you have a great life, then stay there. Right? You don't need to, you know, you don't need this solution, this escape valve called Eretz Yisrael. You don't need that, right? And therefore, when the idea of Uganda was offered to him, well, then that makes sense too. Because it wasn't about some spiritual journey. It wasn't about some sense of some national aspiration. It was about how do we deal with the Jewish problem that Jews are being beaten, pursued, killed. They need a place to run. So if you happen to need a place to run, it's good that Jews have a place to run. And it wouldn't really matter where that place would have been. And if that's the case, I personally would have chose Hawaii. I love Hawaii. Shaloha. I would go to Hawaii. I would go to Hawaii. But for some reason, that's not where we are. Okay? So that was Herzl. But there were others in the Zionist movement that had a completely different perspective. No. The idea of a Jewish homeland is not just simply an asylum, a place to run to, but rather it's an opportunity to express our cultural uniqueness. Right? We need a place where we can not only be free from oppression, but free to express our own culture. We should be able to write Israeli songs. We should be able to choreograph Israeli dance. We should be able to do hora in the street. We should feel comfortable with our falafels. We should create our own food, our own drinks, our own dance, our own poetry. Right? But then, again, would Uganda offer you that? Yeah, basically. You know, unless you have some biblical orientation, maybe it'd be good to have, you know. But basically, once again, it's not connected so much to a land, and it's not so much connected to nationalism as much as simply a place to go. But if you've been in Israel, you will know that a lot of the aspiration of Israel is to be like Americans. Right? So in terms of trying to create a unique Israeli culture, I think the unique Israeli culture is how to look uniquely like American culture. But that was also a basic Zionistic approach, which is, it's not about running away, it's about running to a place where we can just be ourselves. But once again, that is not Torah Zionism, and that's a Zionism that I think is dying, right? As well as the earlier Zionism, which is a place to run, because really today, most Jews feel a lot safer outside of Israel than in Israel. So from Herzl's perspective, there's no reason to go to Israel in the meantime, right, if you can be happy in Hawaii. Okay? But what is Torah all about? What's so promising about the Promised Land? What's promising about the Promised Land is here we can be who we are. The land is not simply a means to an end. Just like your body isn't a means to an end, it's just simply who you are. Without a body, you don't exist. A nation has to have a body. Just like an individual soul has a body, a national soul has a body. What is this, the body of the national soul? It's the land of Israel. And you simply don't exist if you don't have a body. And there's just something mystical about it. And I don't know how many here have been to Israel. Actually, just a show of hands. How many people have visited Israel? There's something really, I think I can speak for most of us, there's something really mystical, something magical that happens when a Jew is in the land of Israel. Right? It's just remarkable. I don't know what it is. I certainly did not grow up in a Zionist-oriented home. I never really heard much about the land of Israel at all at home. But when I got to the land of Israel, there was this feeling of connectivity. There was this feeling of, I'm at home. And yet I didn't grow up there. And I didn't speak the language. The land of Israel is our soulmate. It's our shidduch. How do you know you found your shidduch? It's when that person brings out your potential. When you feel that in this presence of this person, you can really be who you really are. And when you go to the land of Israel, there's this sense of, this is my shidduch. This is my, you know, it's like, this is my body. This is it. But for whatever reason, this is the size it came in, right? But this is the one that fits me. And when you go to the land of Israel, there is a sense that this is our place. This is where we can simply be who we are meant to be. But who are we meant to be? We're not meant to be spiritual individuals. We're meant to be members of a holy nation. And the reason why we've come to this nation is even not for ourselves. We are building the land of Israel for the sake of the world. Because our job, the word Zion means model. It actually literally means a model. A tzion is a gravestone, right? Or a monument. But what is a gravestone or a monument meant to be? It's supposed to be an inspiration to others who this person was and what they brought into the world. And so too, we don't build the land of Israel, the nation of Israel, or ourselves just for ourselves, just to satisfy our needs or to satisfy our desires. It's a service to the world and it's a service to God. And even that becomes a challenge to religious Zionism. Because if religious Zionism isn't in the name of a concern for the world, then that will also bring devastation to even religious Zionism. When it becomes this over-involvement of my particular interests, without a sense of responsibility to being a light unto the nations, that also will unfortunately bring great challenge to the Jewish people. So just sum up. What's so chosen about the Jewish people is not because we're the best people in the world and the smartest people in the world and because we make great falafels. That's not the chosenness. Chosenness is not simply a privilege. It's a responsibility. It's an obligation. And it's an obligation to the world. And we are taken to the land of Israel. Most nations are built on the foundations of self-interest. The reason why we come together into this land is if we work together, we will individually benefit from each other more. So we're here for ourselves. I don't think America was built on the foundations of this will be in the best interest of China. Right? Or this would be in the best interest of the Eskimos, right? This is in the best interest of us, because if we unite together and we have some kind of national policy, the individual benefits by working together with others. But it's, again, very individual-based. What's in the best interest of me, right? And in the best interest of our community. The land of Israel and the state of Israel is a complete riddle. Because it was actually founded in the best interest of the world. That's why, in the strangest way, the world would expect us to be selfless. Who in their right mind would give up their land to anybody? Who would do such a thing? Who in their right mind would take their own people and some of their best people, people who have contributed so much to the army, and it's unbelievable, these people, and into the economy, do you understand? Millions of dollars was coming to Israel because of the agriculture of Gush Katif. Who would do that to their own people? And yet the world thinks that makes sense. That's expected of us. Why? Because in some deep way, maybe the world intuits, and whether they do or not, the Torah teaches us, We didn't come to the land of Israel, and we're not building the state of Israel. And we're not even living our lives just for our own personal satisfaction, what feels good to me. But we're building ourselves, and we're building our land, and we're building our people in the interest of holiness, in the interest of purposeful, meaningful living, serving God's purpose, bringing blessing to the world. And that's the meaning of the land of Israel for us. That's what's so promising. What's so promising about the land of Israel, and why I love living in the land of Israel, although it ain't always easy, right? But what's so amazing, it's such a meaningful existence. It's a feeling that you're part of a bigger story. And it's a sense that you're part of a story that has significance and value to the whole world. And it's an exciting feeling. And you know, if you love football, and you really love football, then you probably spend a lot of money and get front row seats. But you know, if you like football, but you don't love it that you're going to put up $200 or something, so you don't mind getting a cheaper seat somewhere up, you know, in the crowd. And if you know, football's great, you know, it's fun, so you don't mind getting a seat, you know, somewhere at the end of the stadium, use your binoculars. And if you're not such a big fan, but you find it fascinating, so you might want to be outside the stadium and you're happy to kind of listen on your transistor radio, so you kind of feel you're there, but you aren't willing to really spend the money to be inside. And if you're, you know, football is pretty interesting, but you don't mind hearing the results on the news the next day. Right? And you know, football, okay, I know people are into it, and I guess I can't be a nerd and not know what's going on, so I don't mind hearing from my friends what happened yesterday. Right? That's really the choice we have as Jews today. Do you want to be on the field? Do you want to be in the front row? Do you want to just be hearing some messages or some headlines from foreign correspondents about our own country? Or do we want to be players? And do we want to be players, again, not because of what it means to us as individuals, but what it means to us as individuals is what it can do for the world. And that really is the challenge, and we're going to see, I think, even more and more in the next few years. It's a real, what's going on in Israel right now is the way it was described to me by one of my teachers. It's almost what happens to teenagers and the unfortunate high rate of teenage suicide. Why is teenage suicide such a high rate? Because it's in that transition where you go through that identity crisis. When you're a child, you don't ask those big questions so much. Who am I? Why am I? Why is this? Why is it important to be alive? Of course it's important to be alive. Who asks those kinds of questions? But the teenage transition from childhood to adulthood is an extremely challenging and possibly traumatic time in a child's life, because you start asking all those, you know, unaskable questions, those annoying questions, and you really wonder, why are we here? That's what I believe the land of Israel, the state of Israel, is going through right now. We are asking ourselves, why are we here? You see, the Jew who came out of the Holocaust, there was nowhere to go. Right? I mean, there were places to go, and some Jews got there. But it was really quite obvious to a lot of Jews that walked out of a concentration camp, I'm going home. We got to get out of here. We got to get to our land. So there was this Zionism. There was this sense of pioneering. There was this drive. There was this idealism. But it was the idealism of a child who hasn't really philosophically worked this out. It's just like, well, it's obvious. What am I supposed to do? Where am I supposed to go? What am I supposed to do? But now we're in a country that, thank God, has actually, it's a very beautiful country, right? And there's plenty of luxury in the country. It's not like there's Israelis that don't have cars or CD players or cell phones. In fact, I think Israel is probably one of the has the highest rate of cell phone per person. Right? It's not like a country that you feel is poverty stricken. Although there's, unfortunately, there's tremendous poverty in the country. But nonetheless, now Israelis whose grandparents worked so hard and so much wanted to build a state. Now their children are wondering, why should I be here? Why live an uncomfortable life, a life that has risk, when I could live in New Orleans? No. You know, like, who knows where the risks are these days? And so we're going through a tremendous identity crisis, which is always a gift because it creates the opportunity for clarification. But now the next stage, I believe, of Jewish history is, okay, we got our body, but we didn't infuse it with our soul. And so now we're questioning, how important is our body anyways? So now we've given away, I don't know, maybe it's a hand or maybe it's a leg, or I don't know what Gush Katif would be considered in terms of the land of Israel relative to a body. If we give away Jerusalem, we're giving away our heart. Right? We're giving away our heart. But I don't know what Gush Katif was. But what I do know is now each and every one of us has an opportunity, right? And a tremendous opportunity. What am I doing for my people? What am I doing to help build the national dream of the Jewish people? And this is not a pitch to make Aliyah. I once saw a poster from the Ministry of Absorption that had this thistle in a desert. And it was a promotion to come to Israel, and it said, "We never promised you a rose garden." That's very inspiring. Very inspiring. This is not a promotion for Aliyah. This is a promotion for a realization. Who are you? Are you an individual? Are you an island? Just simply seeking to fulfill your personal needs? Or are you ready to ask the question, is there something more important than what just makes me feel good? Is there something more important than what satisfies my desires? Am I perhaps part of a bigger story? Am I perhaps part of being a means to some end greater than myself? How can I serve to be a vehicle to bring greater light in the world? And that's what Judaism claims, that the state of Israel, infused with genuine Torah values and ideals, will not only bring blessings to ourselves, but will bring blessing to the entire world. And Hashem should bless us that we should be blessed to be part of the blessing. Thank you very much.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990, or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.